Hello, welcome to this new episode of All Out for No Laws. I have with me Anand Kumar Sankaran and Vijay Kumar Balasubramanian. And today we have a special guest, Advait Vardarajan, who plays in the MILC for the Orlando Galaxy. And before that, he has played representative cricket in India,
including playing
for the Mumbai Cricket Association in age group cricket. So yeah, he's been through the ropes both as a junior and now as a senior player. He also made the zonals in last year's US zonal tournament. Welcome, Advait.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about everything cricket and more.
In today's episode, we are first going to talk to Advait about what happens in Tampa, where he's based. Cricket in Tampa and cricket largely in the East Coast. And then later in the episode, we'll have a brief review of the T20I series between India and England and a very, very short preview of the ODI series that's starting in a couple of days. Advait, can you tell us a little bit about what goes on with regards to cricket in Tampa?
I keep saying this, that Florida is often, and in Tampa, Orlando, Fort Lauderdale, you name it, but Florida is often considered to be one of the considerably overlooked states when it comes to cricket, in spite of having the most weather-friendly environments, given that we get to play cricket year-round. But over the last 6 years of me living in Florida, Tampa, Orlando being very close, I've seen it grow a lot. We have a lot of tennis ball following. We have a lot of leather ball following. We have three different leagues over here. The tennis ball leagues combine about 100 teams. So definitely out there with the cricket-friendly and or cricket-crazy states. And then also we have like a good, healthy leather ball following over here as well and participation. So I think in Tampa itself, we have about three different leagues that run year-round. And we have about 60, 65 teams that participate across Division A, Division B. And then what's good is Tampa and Orlando, they are like only about an hour and a half away. So there's a lot of exchange of players across the two leagues over there. So Orlando, again, has its own set of leagues, another 30 to 40 teams over there. And the best part being it happens year-round. So we have like the first half of the year, which we can name it as a summer. We play T20s, so three different leagues running T20s. And then during the winters, what's been the trend over here now is we've started playing T35s and T40s. Which have also kind of been hugely helpful, not only like personally speaking, because often we all get caught up in the T20 front, but also from a youth cricket standpoint, it's been largely beneficial because a lot of kids nowadays we're seeing are now joining the teams, playing the 40 over format. So they're getting a taste of how like cricket was when I grew up playing, I learned to play and then they join in the T20 tournaments later. So yeah, we have like a lot of cricket going on here. We have a healthy mix. What I would say is like a diverse crowd. So we have a lot of people from the Caribbean. We have like a really old club in Sarasota. So we have a lot of folks from England, Australia, India, as usual, and the subcontinent region. So yeah, it's a booming, I would say, area when it comes to cricket.
Yeah, what I find fascinating is you actually have a lot of professionals playing minor league cricket as well, not just amateurs. Some big names do play minor league. That's my understanding. Do you see that? What's your experience playing alongside these players?
Yeah, I mean, good point over there, Anand. So one thing I would say is Florida has two teams. I mean, like we started back then in minor league, there was one team, which was Florida Beamers. And then now over the past few years, there are two teams that go from Florida. One is the Orlando Galaxy, which is the team that I represent. There's the Fort Lauderdale Lions. Interestingly enough, and I'll speak a little more towards the Orlando Galaxy to your question. In fact, Orlando Galaxy is one of the only few teams that I know of in the Southern Conference that we play in, which does not essentially bring in professional players, which is a stark contrast to a lot of the majority of the other teams that we see. If you take the Southern Conference, you have Atlanta Fire, which plays with at least like eight, sometimes even nine professional players who have represented either US and or from other countries, states with respect to minor league.
So like whom?
So if you look at it, I think this past year they had Mohammad Saifuddin, who's the Bangladeshi fast bowler who played for Atlanta Fire. So I think he was one guy who was bought. Then you have Rajdeep Darbar, who plays for Atlanta Fire. So these guys are all like very prominent in their respective countries, who are often seen in the cricketing circuit only during the minor league. The point I was trying to make is Orlando Galaxy being a little different. We do not have any players specifically from different, I guess, say countries per se, brought in only for the minor league. We had about 7 to 8 players who were under 21 this year, who are in the US circuit. So you had like guys like Parth Patel who were there in the under 19 circuit for US team. And then in addition to that, we had like 5 or 6 other local young guys, like 19 years old, 20 years old from Atlanta, North Carolina, Florida. So a lot of kids now have started reaching out to Galaxy because we've been like not the best in terms of progression in the tournament, which I would be perfectly honest, but at least in terms of opportunity, we have seen the Florida teams give that chance to a lot of youngsters, which I think embodies like what I believe should be the spirit of minor league cricket, right, in order to, for actually seeing progression in US.
How about your days back, your time back in Mumbai? How did you get into the cricket scene? I know there the competition was be tenfolds here. Is it school or were you from a certain Gurukul or something like that?
No, so like my mom, dad, both of them used to play cricket and both of them are wicketkeeper batsmen, and inevitably that made me a wicketkeeper batsman through genetics. But I started pretty young with my brother at around like 6 or 7 years of age. And then I carried through playing all my cricket in Mumbai. So played for the Mumbai Cricket Association under 15, 17. Actually was a part of the probable camps for Mumbai under 19. After which I kind of like stopped playing for studies, of course. But yeah, I think like majority of my cricket I played in Mumbai, the Harris Field, Gal Shield, the school tournaments that you would have all heard of. And the club that I used to play, the most, one of the three prominent clubs, there were three of them. There was Chandrakant Pandit Cricket Club, CPCC. Then there was the Elf Wing Sarkar. And the third one being MIG. So MIG is where I played. You would have also heard like Sachin playing in MIG Bandra, that used to be his club where he would come to practice. But yes, that's where I played my competitive cricket. That used to be my second club, but my home club used to be DY Patil, where now we have the amazing stadium. But before that stadium came up, there was this small ground behind it, which still exists. And that's where I used to practice. So I played all my cricket for DY Patil, and then I started playing with MIG before I went down south to Vellore to study. And in undergrad time frame, I kind of pursued South Zone cricket instead of like Mumbai cricket. So University South Zone is what I played while I was doing my undergrad. And yeah, and then after that, I was here. I was in Australia for a bit, so played a little cricket here, over there. Nothing too much, considering it was Masters. But then, yeah, after Mumbai and South Zone cricket, I've had a chance to pursue my love for cricket over here in the US. So, yeah.
Oh, so both your parents were wicketkeeper batters?
Yes. How did that happen? Yes, I...
Mom looked at your dad and she said, he's a keeper.
Probably, that is what happened. You might have to do an episode with them to kind of call back to episode 12 to get the scoop on that story. But yes, both of them were keeping batsmen. And yeah, like I learned a lot of my keeping traits from dad, actually. Mom would always have like a nice tip or two about batting and why I should be patient and not be my aggressive self when it comes to batting. But I learned a lot of keeping tricks and tips from dad, because when he used to play in Mumbai, they have the corporate leagues over there. So he had signed me up when I was, I think, like 11 or 12. He had signed me up to play. And at that point, his company used to get a lot of people. It was very common back then to get Ranji players to be a part of your company as trainees, but also get them to play tournaments. So that was a really important piece for my exposure, because I got to play with a lot of the Mumbai Division A, Division B players as a part of the corporate leagues, even though I was not working then. But yeah, I got to learn from them, and inevitably also through Appa, because he used to be a keeper. So yeah, I think a mix of finding ways to play cricket at any possible platform, any possible competitive, I still carry that with me right now. tough to leave. Yeah, and the platform in Florida is also great now for players like me to pursue cricket on an ongoing basis as well.
So when I was growing up in Madurai, this was the TVS Lakshmi School, a very storied school. And we had Srikanth, Lakshman, Sivaramakrishnan, all these guys come and play at our school ground. And that used to be the thing for us, like seeing them once a year or once in every 2 years to see for them. Did you have any star-struck moments there when you were growing up?
For me, I think the one that is etched into my memory is I kept wickets for Sachin. And that's the part in MIG, I remember this very distinctly. So this was when I was part of their under-15 team. So MIG, ELF and PCC, they used to have like, it's by selection only. So you would, there's nothing, it's not like a year-round academy that you could pay for. You have to go for the trials, you have to get selected. So 2 years, I was a part of the MIG camp. And like I was saying, whenever Sachin used to be back in Bandra, so he used to come with his contingency. It used to be like, I think Salil Ankola, he used to be there with a reverse swing ball. And Nandan Fadnis used to be our coach. And he was a wicket keeper too, so it helped in a way because all keepers got some preferential treatment. But he would pick out like the main team keeper and then like the unders, like the junior keepers, and give them a go to keep with when Sachin used to bat. So he used to have like the elongated nets. So yeah, I kept for like I think about an over, which I remember, because else the seniors would kick you out. It was their turn. But yeah, I got a chance to keep for about 6 balls and... it was great. I think that's super inspiring. And yeah, like whatever people say and you hear is true, like cricket goes in slow motion when you watch people like him play. I would always be about 10 seconds late, even though I was behind keeping to fast bowlers. He obviously, Sachin used to have a lot of time. And those are things that you learn, like small things, how you move, how you anticipate. I think that thing is like forever etched into my memory.
Awesome experience. And how about Australia? Like, is it true that the competition is cutthroat even at the school or domestic level? Like,
honestly, I didn't play much in Australia. I was doing my master's there. So as it comes with master's, if I found like a weekend that was free, I just played like some of the local cricket. I was in Adelaide. I did get a chance to go to the India versus Pakistan game, which was a different experience in itself, but not so much like where I could play a ton. I think that was probably one of the years where I played the least amount of cricket, even though I went there hoping to play the most amount of cricket.
Coming back to Tampa, you mentioned the other day that you work with some youngsters here and do a little bit of youth training. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think going back to the topics of having played a lot of cricket in India, like one of the immediate things that me and a friend of mine, Hardik, who also plays with me in the minor league cricket, we realize that there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of enthusiasm, there's a lot of eagerness for kids to learn cricket over here. However, not all of them get the platform. For the amount of cricket that happens here, Tampa, for example, has only 2 academies. Orlando has 1 more. We are involved. There's a Roy Silva Cricket Academy. I think some of you would have heard. He used to be an ex-USA cricketer from Sri Lanka. Originally, he runs an academy, and then we both started getting ourselves immersed with another academy, which is called Tampa Cricket League Academy. So it's affiliated to that league, but we had a lot of kids coming. So now overall, I think in Tampa, we have about 65 to 80 kids who play cricket, and we teach all ages. So like from under 11, under 15. And I think our goal is to primarily get them like the same level of exposure, the same level of training, and moreover like a routine. I think like that's what we see over here, at least in Tampa. A lot of kids needed that direction, because usually I think one of the things I was mentioning to you is, unfortunately in US, the way things have, and maybe I'll just stick to Florida because I'm not familiar about how things happen elsewhere, but it was a parent driven coaching as opposed to a coach driven coaching. And we saw that like in a couple of sessions that we were there, and just to observe, kids would come, start picking up the bat and ball, and they would start playing. There's no warm up. There is no taking the rounds. Because I remember when I was young, I would not even see the bat or the ball for the first hour and a half. Like you're working on everything else till you get to the position where you can start playing with the bat and the ball. So I think over here, our focus, at least in my brief involvement so far with all kids, is to bring structure, to get some level of discipline on like how you approach the game. So the entire process, and more importantly, it's largely educative to the parents also, where we kind of tell them like, trust your coaches. Don't all of you go take a bat and a ball and start playing. Like, there's a process through which your child will improve, and that's the one that we've been focusing on. Give it some time and see like measurable improvements. So yeah, that's been my brief stint over here. We've just been involved for the last 6 months, but in the last 6 months we've gotten like some level of structure that we've added to the youth teams over here. But yes, we have like about 65 to 80 kids.
Yeah, I think it is the same on the West Coast as well. So it's a lot parent-driven still. Getting local coaches is just next to impossible. There's no homegrown coaches. So they are a rare commodity. So parents try to fill that role, and then it becomes like a lot of vested interest. And of course, basically not coaches. So that shows at times. Yeah.
Yeah. USA Cricket has started this now. The foundational coaching program is accessible to everyone. So it's just you do it through an app. Right? And then level ones are now being introduced by USA Cricket. So locally, wherever, whoever is listening and is interested, like, you can always reach out to USA Cricket. I did that myself. So we have camps like in Atlanta, Florida, where you can actually go for your level one courses and coaching. And they help you like get your certifications. And we've pushed local cricketers from here to just start getting those certifications. Just so that, like you said, that's a very good point. It's very difficult for academies here, for example, to find coaches, one, and then find consistent coaches, two. Because a lot of times kids see a coach. I'm taking my own example. Like, kids see a coach for one tournament. So 1 month they spent with that coach, gotten used to the coach's style, gotten used to the coach's way of approaching things, and bam. This coach does not have more time. You then have started working with a different coach. So it's a situational driven thing as well, where parents unfortunately have to take that step, like you said, sir, that there is no consistency. So the only consistent thing for kids that I see is the parents, because coaches keep coming and going. So yeah, like, I think you bring up a good point. It's a supply demand issue, yeah, but right. Hopefully the situation improves over here, at least in Tampa that I've seen.
I've seen it many times, like even in game situations, we basically parrot what we see on the TV, right? So let's say you need in runs in the last over, and the parents are yelling at the kids to hit boundaries. And the coach knows that that kid is not a boundary hitting player. The coach is kind of sending a different message. That is like, you know, start stealing runs. Don't go for big shots. And of course, when these guys are shouting boundary, boundary, they had everybody at the boundary, and these kids were hitting inside the circle and running two or three runs. So there is a difference. So listen to the coach and not the parent.
I have to tell you this. I have to tell you this incident. This was one of the most hilarious incidents. I mean, it was my first time. So Thanksgiving 2024, we had a tournament, and our team was like coming off of like, I think, 4 or 5 leagues that they played previously, didn't go well. So it was my first time with this team. So everyone's morale is down. And like, we had a great tournament. Like, we lost all the games, but great improvement overall from all kids. And the final game, we are winning. So the opposition team needs 1 ball, 3 runs to win. Okay. And at that point, like you said, there is messages flying across everywhere. Like, all my messages that So the entire tournament, I had like no comms whatsoever. Like, all parents were hugely supportive. Everyone was great. And then that final ball, everyone's trying to give like the message of us. Okay, guys, do not throw the ball. Okay, guys, hold on to the ball. We were fielding. Okay. It's like, just go to the stumps, run to the stumps. Okay, back up. Like, so all these messages have gone into the kids. I ran that previous ball and said, guys, do not do anything. Do not throw the ball. Just keep the ball. The bowler bowls. Like I said, this team has not seen victory for a long time. So the batsman misses. The keeper catches the ball. We have 20, 30 kids running into the ground. Okay, but the ball is still in play.
Or of course.
The keeper runs. The keeper runs and just out of excitement hits the batsman's stump, and the ball pops out of his hand. Now these kids are running. And now 3/4 of the ground is like people. Now this kid from the other end, from covers, runs in, gets the ball, sees that the non-striker is out, just absolutely takes a throw at it and he misses it. Okay, now the ball is gone for an overthrow. Now the stumps have disappeared. Someone has taken the stumps. Now three parents run in front of me and they tell their kids to run the three runs. And the kids run the three runs. And that's it. Then the game just goes like completely quiet. And then the umpires and the coaches, everyone's like fighting at this point saying, what was the final decision? This was like one of those Instagram videos that you see.
What was the final decision? You can't leave us hanging.
So the final decision that it was a draw. We called it a tie. I had like a 15-minute argument with the umpires where I was like, where was the ball dead? You tell me that. And then the opposition coach had his own valid point. Like I said, we saw it through the videos and everything. I'll send the videos. You guys can take a look at it. And then the fielder threw the ball. And then finally, the argument was like, yeah, the batsman wouldn't have run had the parents not pushed the kids to run. There were two parents telling them to run. So, I mean, we would have kept just going on and on. But at the end of the day, we just kind of, what we did, and which I think was good, was both coaches, like me and the other coach, I know him very well as well, we just said, let's call it a tie. So we got all the kids into the ground, including the guys who ran in. Firstly, told them, do not run again. Like, don't run until, like, the game is called for one. And then all the other kids, we said what not to do. And then they all said yes. And then this tournament, again, one of the same things happened again. So, at the end of the day, the learnings being, like, with the parents group, I'm saying, let kids be kids. This is okay. They'll figure it out. Like, these things will happen in a youth tournament.
I hope somebody said that cricket was the winner.
I'm going to ask you, like, completely different level of a question. Given that you have played cricket in three different continents, what cricket ball is used in minor league? Or what brand of cricket balls is used in minor league?
They use this brand called Fortress. I've seen this company only on one of the websites more commonly. This is called Networld Sports or something. But the ball that they use is Fortress. It's like all rebranded. It's not like a SG or a Kookaburra or anything like that. They just do a Fortress and you'll see like an MILC logo. That's very predominant in most of like the local tournaments I play. They just take the brand of the ball away and they just do like labels.
So as a batter who played in these three different continents with three different balls, like, is there a huge difference between these balls? How do you cope up? Yeah. How do you play?
To be very honest, I think Australia club cricket, like, I played maybe about four games overall. The quality of the ball there is like infinitely better than the quality of the ball that was used locally in India and in the US. And it's a function, in my opinion, of the price to the quality. And unfortunately, cricket has not gotten any cheaper. So locally speaking, even over here, we'll end up using in the US, we use the standard four-piece ball. It's not like we use a two-piece ball. But in the US, I've seen a lot of leagues operate out of like $8 to $10 balls. Not really the best. Sometimes maybe $14 balls over here locally, which have now locally in Tampa has started like using machine stitched balls, four pieces. India, there's a wide range, like Meerut, Jalan. But typically, like in all the analysis and research that I've done on balls, I personally tend to prefer balls that are made out of Jalandhar, because of the cork, the quality of the cork that they use. In Meerut, unfortunately, I've spoken to and dealt with a lot of different manufacturers. The quality of the cork isn't good at the base level. But of course, as you start, like majority of the companies like SG, SS, SG more specifically, because SG Test is a very common ball that is used, which is high quality. The quality over there is really good. But I think overall, across the three continents, to answer your question, like Australia has been like the most that I've enjoyed, because there they focus attention on the quality of their ball, which has to be, in my opinion, the most important, and where all tournament organizers and all the way to the parents, I say, like, if you're spending $800 on a cricket bat and you use a $5 ball, that $800 bat is worth a $100 bat because you're going to break it that quickly. But if you spend $15, $20 at some point, don't get too many balls, get fewer balls, but get quality balls, those make a world of difference in your quality of the game that you have.
One last question. Who was the tougher minor league bowler you faced?
Oh, very good question. I think for me, the answer is very clear in my head, because this person's ball I couldn't I mean, I was always like a second late. It was Derville Green from the Baltimore Royals team. So I think he was probably the toughest bowler that I faced because he was very, very quick. But he was also very deceptive quick. Like, you know, some bowlers who are fast, who get the bounce, you can play easy. You can expect the ball to be at a certain length and a height. But Derville Green was nippy. He's flat and he's quick and it skids like very unexpectedly. I think for me, he was the toughest bowler that I've faced out of all of them. Thank you for having me. It's fun talking about cricket in Tampa and across.
Thanks, everyone.